Anyway, welcome to the next edition of Keto Chapters. I even remember the name of it. And today we've got Ian McGill with us, who, and we're going to ask him a few questions about sort of not only his keto journey, but a little bit about what he now brings to Keto Fitness Club as well. However, I have a bone to pick with Ian.
Yes.
We had a conversation like 3 years ago at a network meeting. I was sort of like really, really happy to sort of get to, because this was in the early days when no one talked to me. And you purposely came and talked to me. And I thought, this is brilliant. I've got someone to talk to. And then I could never get hold of him again. He just blanked my messages. He just didn't come to any of the meetings. It's like, right, well, thanks for that. You just left me hanging.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I blanked the message. I felt like I always answered them. But every time you went, because it was like a business meeting, wasn't it? And every time you picked, I think it was a Wednesday morning, so I was always doing something. But I actually look at that as a bit of serendipity, because when it came to you pushing the keto thing, and I always say this, if you're ready to hear the message, and I was ready to hear the message then. And then I went and I wanted to go to your workshop, and I just asked, have you got a workshop nearby? Mm. And that's when you did that one. Was it in Kelmarsh?
Yeah, but I just remember this, that first meeting. I thought, well, why can't I get you to come to another meeting? Why can't I get another conversation with? What's going on? But yeah, so it wore me down for a little while, you know. But that's when you're just trying to get started off and trying to talk to people, trying to find people to talk to.
Yeah.
So and anyway.
I wasn't really seeing it like that. What attracted me to you in that place was your energy. That's what got me there, and I just knew I had to speak to you.
It's funny because you were already fasting. I remember that. We were already talking. I mean, I hadn't started fasting at that point.
Yeah.
You hadn't started keto, and I hadn't started fasting. We were coming at it from different angles, and that really interested me. And that sort of was one of the first times that I'd actually heard of anyone sort of doing any sort of extended fasting.
Yeah, and again, the keto. I remember you showing me stuff on your computer, and I was more interested in your story than actually the keto part of it at the time, because I didn't even really know what it was. Mm. And I don't even know if you were telling me what it was.
I can't remember.
Clearly enough, but honestly, I wasn't hearing it. But I remember looking down and saying, I'm going to go over there, speak to that guy, because I don't know. I don't know what it was, what attracted me to come and speak to you, but I did. And it's funny because I don't even know why I was there. Because like you said.
Yeah. I mean, was it on a health and fitness exhibition?
Yeah,
it
was an event being run.
Mm. Can't remember. So many. But let's have a little bit of history from you. I know bits. I know snippets.
Yeah. Sorry, have you forgiven me, though? I need to make sure you've forgiven me.
Well, okay. We'll talk about it next week.
All right. Let it go.
Go on. So, obviously, we know what you do now, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what have you done in the past? What's your history of career wise?
Oh, career wise. Okay. Yeah.
It's
quite quick. It's not that. I mean, I started off as an apprentice electrical engineer in what used to be called the Works, British Steel, and then I quickly moved from there. And went to a packaging firm where I stayed for 15 years, and I worked up from electrical engineer.
These local?
Yeah.
Right, so you've always lived sort of
I've always lived.
Corby area?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much. I lived in Kettering for a year.
Did you?
Yeah. So I moved to the packaging firm, which was a Dutch packaging firm, which was brilliant. And then it got bought out and stuff, and things happened. But in that, I went to university, and I worked myself right up through engineer and manager, right up to operations director.
Yeah.
So I had a directorship for about 2 years. And then I left there to go and work on my own for a bit and did a bit in sales, a bit in engineering sales, scoping projects and stuff. Then I did a work for myself for a little while, doing cooling towers, believe it or not, down in London and stuff. But I worked with someone doing that. And then I went to Weetabix for 8 years.
I was going to say, so one of the things that our hometown is famous for, probably the only thing. Must be. Yeah, it's the only thing we're famous for, isn't it, Burton Latimer?
It's
Weetabix.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had a Weetabix over in Corby as well.
Yeah, they had Corby 1 and Corby 2. So I covered both as a project manager and improvement manager. And then in the final year or so, I was actually a based at Burnt Latimer, so I got to see where the biscuits were made.
Right, okay. It, yeah, we can smell them when they're being made.
Yeah.
We can smell the flavour.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. The Corby one does sort of like flakes and ready brick.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. You told me that last time.
And Wheatos.
I had no idea they made those there.
Yeah.
But yeah, we can sort of usually detect whether they're making the chocolate minis. Is there a caramel version?
Probably.
Well, we can smell it in the air.
I think I taste tested like at the top of
yeah.
Something.
I mean, as the crow flies, we're less than a mile away from the factory. And obviously it sort of drifts across with the wind directions in the right way. So how long were you at Weetabix for then?
Well, I went for 6 months on like a contract and I stayed for 8 years. So it was time for me to leave. I mean, I'm really glad I finished up at Burton Latimer because to get to see the biscuits being made.
Right. You know,
I hadn't actually seen them being made, even though I knew they made them.
Yeah.
And then it was funny because it was at Weetabix. I was on a financial course, believe it or not. And this guy come in to talk about accountancy and stuff and budgets. And I just liked the way he handled the room.
Okay.
He really had, you know, he's talking and then he did this thing. I thought he just closes all down straight away. And at the end of this, I didn't even hear the financial stuff. But at the end of it, I just spoke to him. I said, I really like the way you close every down. You didn't upset anybody and everybody just got into order. He says, yeah, I've just come off an NLP course. I said, oh, I used to love NLP, neuro-linguistic
right, okay,
programming.
Yeah.
And he then said to me, he said, well, I just finished a course. And I said, well, I'm really interested in that. And that's where it really started. Because I was always, you know, if I give a bit of a backstory about where I'm at, but I can do that. But I was searching for something to get me to that place. I've always been searching till now. And yeah, that was up in Hull, a guy called Keith Hume, who trained me for 6 days, and it was the start of my journey back to.
So how long have you been doing NLP then?
So that was,
I know you do other stuff now as well, but
yeah,
that was the beginning of it.
The NLP sort of, it goes, I actually went to see Andy Robbins years ago, but I was married at the time with three children, and it felt a bit cultish. So I didn't sign up to that, really. I just went to it for 4 days. I got a ticket in Birmingham or something, but actually, so it goes back to then, but really been studying it properly as you can get certified and stuff since about 2013.
Right.
So it's about 7 years.
So explain the benefits of NLP.
Well, the benefits of NLP, if you're searching for something, it's a way of reframing and modeling whatever works for you. So you don't sort of focus on things that are holding you back. You focus on things that are going to move you forward. So neuro is working on your brain. Mm-hmm. I like the word mindset. And language is the language that you use. Just talking to yourself in a more positive way.
Yeah.
And the program is the patterns you run. So I was running a pattern, you know, of grief. I was running a stuck pattern. Yeah. And I was trying to, you know, the good thing is I was trying to get out of it without self-medicating, or even though I was probably with food, because, you know, that's one of the things that keto helped me with was to get rid of that extra weight. It's just modeling excellence. If you chunk it up, it's modeling whatever works. And it's a technique. And the stuff I look at now in the transformational stuff is sometimes you need a technique to get you there. But once you realize that your thinking is what's going to make things happen for you, the way you think about them. And my thinking, my stuck thinking was not helping me. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And I think, well, I think.
You're allowed to think. You're allowed to think.
We all think.
Everybody's allowed to think.
But we all think, or is that the right thing to say? We all struggle with our thinking, or the majority of us struggle with our thinking. I want to sort of say that no one doesn't struggle. But, you know, a lot of us struggle with our thinking, don't we, about sort of how we feel, how we look. And it is important to actually sort of put ourselves forward when we think, not talk to ourselves the way we do sometimes. We talk to ourselves in the worst way possible, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny as well. When I was up in Hull, which, you know, is up north, the guy that was training me there, he actually called it, he coined the phrase, and it's been used quite a lot now. And he, I don't know if I can swear, but it's
she'll either leave it in or she'll honk it out.
He just called it, you're in a critic, you're in a voice, and he called it your shitty committee.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I like that. If you spell it, if you spell it like in a fun way, it doesn't sound so aggressive. And it is, it's just that voice in your head that goes round and round and ruminates, and you just get stuck. And it doesn't matter what people say to you, really, until you're ready to hear the message. So what I'm saying is something in that accounts room said, I need to sign up for this. Yeah. And I signed up for this course. And then that led me to another course, which was down in London, which was more of a career path in NLP. And that was with Toby and Kate McCartney. And they really, it was a real connection. It was all about getting back, you know, getting back involved with people and seeing that there's other people like you and having a community that actually, you know, you're not alone in your stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit like the keto.
Just going to say, because it's a little bit like what we try and sort of.
You know, you don't try, you do.
Okay. It's what we try to aim at doing.
Language.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? How you, the way we talk, it just slips out.
Yeah.
It just.
Yeah. I say, you know, try and pick up this cup.
Yeah.
You can't try and pick it up.
You can't try. You either do or you don't.
Yeah. So that's what, that explains what trying really is. If you're telling yourself you're trying to do something, you probably won't do it.
God, it's
just. That's just like contemplating his whole life.
You're like,
hang on.
But the only thing I will say to that is that I know now that when I get on the start line of a marathon, I'm not going to try and finish it. I am going to finish it.
Well, that's a perfect.
And I've known that now for years. I can rock up and I will finish that marathon.
Yeah. And that's the key to everything in life is not even worrying about knowing that's going to happen, but just having that feeling.
Yeah.
So you take that feeling that you've got about marathons and you apply it to everything in your life because you're the same person.
Yeah.
It's just a different subject matter or a different logistics.
Why do you think we struggle so much with the way we talk to ourselves?
Because we're conditioned from a very early age to, a lot of people, when we do the talks on a Monday night is about, I'm a people pleaser, I do things for other people. I put other people first. And that's, we have to do that. We come into this world looking to survive. So we have to be a cute baby. You know, this babies are cute. That's why they're cute. They need to survive. So they get fed and they get nurtured. So you do that. And innocently, we get conditioned, even to the extent of sometimes when, you know, you say to your children, you've done really well, or you've not done that well. That's a condition. Yeah. It's innocent, but it's a condition. Yeah, yeah. So now people think, I have to smile more. I have to look better. I have to do this. I have to do that. Then people will like me. Well, at the end of the day, as long as you like yourself and you're authentic to that and you're kind with it and you're grateful for it and you do all the things that us humans should do in this human experience, then nothing's wrong, nothing's broken. And the reason we do it, and I say I've defragged my brain by 80%, is because if you're an overthinker and you're oversensitive and you're a perfectionist, well, guess what? Guess what's going to happen? You're always going to not quite achieve something. Therefore, you're going to try harder. And therefore, you're going to do more personal thinking. Why did I fail? Why did I not do that marathon? Why did I not manage to train? And you beat yourself up.
Yeah.
And when you beat yourself up, you don't perform so well.
Yeah.
Did I answer the question?
Yeah. And obviously, we see people sort of struggling on a daily basis to sort of change their lifestyles and have a bad day and just go, oh, well, I've had a bad day, so I might as well make it even worse. And they'll just go and do something that, whether that might have been something they used previously to sort of as a comfort, you know, sort of comfort eating, or again for me it was drinking. You know, I don't do it now, but I know that if I'd had a bad day, I'd have straight over to Sainsbury's, got a bottle of wine, and that was my comfort, and I just sit and, you know, didn't make me feel better. It just.
And the missing link there is your thinking around that. It's like, I feel a bit low, so therefore I have to do something to cope with it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you feel a little bit low, it's probably your body's a great system for telling you when to quiet down. And a lot of people who overthink get very anxious thoughts. And that's like running marathons in your head, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then they worry why they're sitting on the couch all day watching Netflix or something. But that's your body saying, well, you just ran 6 marathons. So rest.
Yeah.
But you've just done it in your head. It's mad, isn't it?
It is. It's mind-blowing. So you went from NLP, you're now a transformational coach.
Yeah, and the subtle difference there is I still use my techniques. I'm a hypnotherapist as well, and I use that to relax people. I still use some techniques in NLP that, you know, like clean language, timeline.
So not Shitaki Murti. You don't mean that clean language.
No, I don't mean it that way. No. Clean language is really just sort of not putting in my imposition into people's heads. So I ask them, you know, questions that's not going to, like if I said to you, picture your perfect house. And then I said, what does the white picket fence look like? And you go, oh, there isn't a picket fence in mine. Yeah. So you don't say that. You say, and that looks like what?
Yeah.
Is a clean question.
Yeah.
But the real game changer for me was that I didn't start to look outside of, and I've looked at a lot of development stuff, you know, and paid a lot of money to be developed. But the game changer for me was my own insight into the fact that looking outside of myself will not give me any true happiness until I fix what's inside.
Yeah.
And so I had to look inside to see what that was. And you could call that feel it to heal it if you keep it content free. You're just feeling it to heal it. And if I give it in context, I was being strong for years because I was a grieving father. Mm. And that strength was actually hindering me moving forward because I was being something for someone else.
Yeah.
And it's when I let go of that, and I use the word vulnerable, when I became vulnerable to my own feelings, hey, guess what? They didn't hurt me really. They didn't harm me. And then I realized the thing that took me away from that was all the conditioned thinking, the thing I had to be a strong father, I had to be there for everybody else, I had to do things. So once I let go of that, and people go, oh, but then you don't care for people. No, I actually care more for people now.
Yeah,
I've got the capacity now because I've dropped all that. I liken it like being in a rocking chair, and that's what worrying is. You're just rocking the rocking chair, but it's not getting you anywhere, and it's using all your energy up. And I just got out of the rocking chair and I just show up now.
And it sounds so simple, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yet we struggle for years.
Yeah. And it was like a 4-second insight, you know, it was just an insight that I wanted aliveness. And I'd convinced myself with my conditioned thinking, my personal thinking, that I couldn't have that.
Do you think we convince ourselves that we can't be?
Yeah. Yeah.
Healed, repaired, whatever word you want to say. Do we sort of say, no, I'm beyond it. Absolutely.
You hear words like I'm stoic or I'm stubborn. Them things keep you fixed for a long time. That's why I don't like mindset so much, because fixed mindset.
Yeah. If you have, and the more I think about that term, I agree. It's just finding another term that trips off the tongue easier.
Yeah. Well, the one for me, and it's nothing to do with mind, is free will. It's like, you know, I said on one of the talks that willpower is based on fear.
Yeah.
But free will, it's not based on anything. It's based on what you can do for yourself. And this is hard for people to get, but I keep pointing to it. Because I just use my feelings, because I trust my intuition, I trust my gut. Since I've started dropping all the thinking, I can't do anxiety. I used to get it in my stomach, and I realized I get anxious in my stomach. And I even got a little bit anxious about doing this. I'm thinking, well, what are you being anxious about this for? And guess what was on the radio? I sat there for just 5 minutes, composed myself, giving time to come. And it was, if you want a sign, don't worry, come on the radio. I started singing along with that. And then I came in and I think I had a drink of water and I'm chilled out. I'm completely chilled out.
Oh, it's funny because when we first started doing this, it was quite anxious. Yeah. Now, literally, obviously, I was out shopping, walked in 5 minutes before you walked into the house. And it's like, right, let's just sit down and let's have a chat. The fact that it's got the microphones and a camera pointing at us and a teenager waving occasionally.
You just look like a couple of experts at it. And I was sitting going, what's this do?
Right, so.
One thing that Ian just said was, you're a 4-second change of thought.
Yeah, insight.
You say exactly the same thing about you had the 4 second, like it was literally like a moment where you decided.
Yeah, change. Of mine was, yeah, my decision to change, my decision to give up alcohol and to change my lifestyle happened in a dark place.
Yeah.
And it was one thought. And that's all it took. It was one thought.
Hey, you're stealing my tagline.
And I literally stood up and thought, that's it.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
And I never went back to that place again. I was at a festival. I was in a field and I was drunk. But I've been in festivals since. And I've been, in fact, I haven't drank because the festivals that we've gone to since, we've gone as a family. And I've enjoyed them way more than I did at the time.
Yeah, so I would say that once you've had your insight, which is a 4 second thing, what followed mine was tears of realization. Yeah, that's how I knew.
Yeah, yeah, 100%,
I knew. It, yeah, it shifted. Yeah. And then you just see the world differently.
Yeah.
That's it. And people have them. People have had them on the Monday nights where they just see the world differently.
Yeah.
And it's not. It can be the simplest of changes. It can be a little insight, but you just see it differently. And then you move to that good feeling, or with that good feeling. And see what comes.
Part of mine, I don't mind saying, well, Ella's here. Part of mine was I would get a weekend or sort of like an extended weekend away from the kids once a year or twice a year, and that was it. And it was on one of those weekends away. I was at a festival, and I realized that I was drinking myself into a early grave. And rather than think about sort of having time away from them, and that's my enjoyment, actually, I'd rather them be there with me. Mm-hmm. And it just changed my entire outlook from that point onwards. I just sort of said, that's it, I'm going to change. At that point, I was severely overweight, drinking lots of wine, cider, beer, and whatever else I could, and not really caring about, you know, myself at all. And I had all of those negative thoughts. You know, the worst thought was, they're better off without me. That was the thought.
Yeah,
they're better off without me. And the second I thought about that, I was like, the hell am I talking about? What the hell am I? Yeah, the tears did come because it was like, how dare you? You know, they'd lost Lindsay. How the hell do you think that, you know, by me disappearing is going to make their life any better? And that was it.
That's beautiful.
Still get emotional about it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's a good share.
Right, it threw me there then. Thanks, Ella. Thanks, Ella.
Sorry, it was a good insight.
Yeah, I know. So I wanted to sort of come back. So we've mentioned Monday nights a few times. Sorry, Archie's come to join the party now as well. He doesn't get a microphone.
He
doesn't need one. So over the last, it's probably nearly 3 months now, isn't it? We started this. So during the lockdown period, is it 4 months?
Five.
Wow. Yeah, lads, I've flown by. During lockdown period, we sort of decided to use Zoom to sort of just have a few conversations within the groups. And one conversation that we decided to sort of make a bit more, I wouldn't say formal. The others are quite relaxed, or they're very informal, definitely, where any conversation sort of can happen. But at least with Monday nights, it is more about our thinking, isn't it? So we're trying to keep it on topic. And it's quickly become the most attended session we do all week. Hang on a minute. We'll just let the dog finish off his happy dance.
Carry on.
But, right, so the dog's just had a bone. He's had a cow.
That's Argie, by the way, not me.
Yeah. He's had a meaty bone. And he's come in and he does his happy dance where he sort of rubs his head inside his sofa. To let everybody, he's done now. But anyway. Yeah, so, I think that just came out of a conversation between us about sort of, can we run a little session to help people? And this was the initial part of lockdown, wasn't it? When everyone was like, well, no one can go anywhere. And everyone's mood sort of went down. And you could sort of see people thinking, well, this is going to be hard. How am I going to maintain keto? Or how am I going to sort of maintain my journey when we can't get any food in the shops and we can't do this and we can't do that? So we just had a chat one day. So I said, well, let's do a little chat about our thinking. And suddenly it's become now the most well-attended session, the one that everyone talks about. So your influence in the group has been quite dramatic, really, over the last few months.
Hmm. Well, before I talk about that, I've got a bone to pick with you.
Oh,
because about 3 years ago, I said to you.
Yeah, let's have a session.
No, but it did. Like I say, I went, I think it was back in March, and I came to one of the workshops, and I had that aha moment.
Yeah, so
then.
You came to what? Was it almost the last, second to last workshop?
Yeah.
So yeah, so we were obviously running workshops live. Ian lives local, came to one, we ran at Kettering. We ended up having a chat a bit after the session. But yeah, then sort of the world fell to pieces.
And we didn't know that was going to happen. And I'd even booked on the next live one. You know, I'd actually booked the next live thinking I'm going to go to that and talk to people about their thinking. But actually didn't realize we were going to start to be in online. And what made me think about that, I was talking to somebody at the local one. And they were saying, I'm doing keto, but I don't seem to be losing weight or don't seem to be doing that. And I could tell that her thinking was all wrong. You know, she wasn't doing keto. She thought, you know, because the next conversation was, you know, I have this amount of wine at the weekend, and I, you know, and that's fine. But she wasn't. There was something going on that she was. I like to use the word tranquilized to stuff. You know, that we self medicate with food and stuff like that. You become sort of tranquilized. That's our self medication. That's what I did for years to comfort things. So I could tell there was something. And yet, when I was starting the journey, I was, and I say this, I started happy. And I'm still happy doing it.
Yeah.
And I don't even, I used to say I finished happy, but I haven't finished. No. I'm still going. It's a lifestyle. It's not a sort of one hit. So, and I just realized that was empowering me on the keto side of it. Because the keto just takes care of itself with all the stuff that you do. But I realized that, and then we did the talks. I could hear it in people's language, and I could hear it the way they were saying things, you know. Oh, I can't do it because I'm, you know, I'm caring for this person, or I'm people pleasing, or I can't get to it because of this, and this. Mm-hmm. And I could just hear the thinking going on.
Yeah.
And that's why we started them. And yeah, I think the first lot were subjects that were chosen by the people that were coming on. So I was speaking to that.
It is, well, and this is probably doing you a disservice, but you know, I don't mean it this way. It's amazing how many people have said to me, oh my God, I've had a conversation with Ian. And they just feel better. They just feel like they've got more control, or however they want to explain it. But whatever you do when you have conversations with people, it just seems to trigger a light bulb and allows them to just. I'm gonna. I'm sure she won't mind. Ellie's had a block about sort of. Oh, I can't run. And I've had a conversation with her. I know you've had a conversation with her. And suddenly she's now got her own running group. I mean, this is what happens when people have a conversation with her. They decide to sort of go and set up their own sort of affiliated, that she's running it under Keto Fitness Club, running groups. And I was like, wow, that's such a change in 6 months, something like that. So the effect that you have on people is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and if I chunk it up, all I'm really doing is sharing the hope and pointing to the possibility of their own insight and their own aliveness.
I loved actually your point. It wasn't last week, but the week before, about the FM.
Yeah, yeah.
So tuning into somebody else's station, tuning into them, and that's, we're all guilty of that.
Yeah.
I've been guilty of that. You know, we've had a conversation about this when we've received some criticism, and it's like, I've tuned into that negativity, and it's like, why? That's that person. That's just their thinking. It's not my thinking.
Yeah.
But it is hard, isn't it? When you, it might only take one person to comment that somebody said, oh, somebody at work told me this week that I've lost too much weight. And that's all they worried about. I've lost too much weight.
And just to use that analogy with the FM, which is the fear mode, if you like, because they've said that, you just tuned into what they said on fear mode. And where I try to get people is that AM, because we call it AM, which is aliveness mode or authentic mode.
Yeah, and that's where Ellie's sitting right now, isn't she?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's in that authentic mode because she loves the fact that she can go out running, she can post about it. We had a quick chat this morning in one of the groups, and somebody said to her, how's your running group going? And it's like, oh my God, I've got people coming out meeting me. And you can see that it's her authentic self, that
yeah.
she just loves the idea that she can help people learn to run.
And depends what your aliveness is. Everybody's got that in them. And how I used to say it before was I used to get rid of their anxieties or the things, the fears. It's all fear, really. It's all fear-based. And I used to say it was like cutting the parachute off your back,
yeah.
which is stop, you know, it, and with using the running thing, you're running forward, but you've got this parachute holding your back. Yeah. And it gets really tiresome.
Yeah, yeah.
and I, when I do sessions, I all just, you know, if I cut them off in, as soon as I can, because I like to transform as quickly as possible. And then I say, what are you going to do with that? What is your creativity? You know, and talk this Monday's about creativity, so that'll come up. What are you going to do now? You're not in that rocking chair or spinning around using all your energy based on fear. Yeah. And you still will have fear, but it's becoming okay about it. It's becoming okay with your okayness. And that could be, if you say, I'm going to sit on the couch for 2 days and do nothing, then do that.
Yeah, be okay with it.
Yeah, don't beat yourself up.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're supposed to pick the kids up or something. But yeah, really sort of, it's the beating up and it's that personal thinking, it's that conditioned thinking that we've collected over the years in the 7A's program.
Yeah.
We talked about accumulating. And all I do now is accumulate new and fresh because I know what, I recognize it now. I recognize the stuff that's going to pull me back and I stay at the level where I don't have to come back down and get caught up in any dramas.
Yeah.
And I can help better from there than coming down to this level where the drama's happening. And I don't accumulate any of this anymore. I'm here and I don't take it on. I'm like Teflon man now, where I used to be Velcro man. Things used to stick to me.
Stick to it. And actually, along with the recording, I'm sure Ella's going to put the before and after pictures of, you know, and this is only in the space of what, 6 months, 7 months, your before and afters?
16 weeks.
Is it 16 weeks?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was 16 weeks, and then there was 4 weeks where I was just trying to get rid of the last
right. So for those that haven't sort of heard your story on a Monday night, so this is going out to a much wider audience than just the members group.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell them how your journey's been for the last 16 plus weeks.
Well, I've been on it since February right. now, yeah. So I'm maintaining now. I've maintained my target weight for the last 3-4 months, but it was, I think, on the thing it was like from February to June, and that was my target really to get there by my birthday, and. So I lost 46 pounds in them 16 to 20 weeks.
Right.
But it was, you know, when I weighed myself after 16 weeks, and I was one of these people that weighed themselves every morning.
Yeah.
And I'm different from everybody. If I lost weight, it motivated me. If I put on weight, it
motivated
me.
When I heard you say this, I thought, I'm not sure other people are going to take that as a motivation.
No, I know.
I put a pound on.
Yeah. It's
that shows that you're, mindset
is in a different place. Yeah, and what I say, and I come up with this, and I loved it, was when I was looking in the mirror. So I was like a transformational coach. I was helping people, and I was definitely grounded. When I got my insight, I felt like I come to the ground, mm-hmm. and I was thinking, but I'm looking in the mirror, and I don't see the person. I see the old person. So what's going on? And my biggest stumbling block was really to stop eating chocolate. That was the biggest one for me.
Okay,
and I just recognized. And I worked on what chocolate meant for me. This is the feel it to heal it thing. And chocolate replaced love or the loss of love. Yeah. And that can be grief. You know, grief is love with no place to go.
Yeah.
So you're searching for it. Now I've changed that and, you know, energy never dies and you just don't lose that. But, you know, so what I did was I got sorted out the chocolate thing and then I went on a very low 10 gram type carb diet and went for it big time with all the eating and stuff. And I couldn't believe, and I didn't have any cortisol because I wasn't anxious because I wasn't making cortisol, which can stall things as well.
Yes, it certainly can, yeah. And when people stress about sort of getting on the scales and it hasn't moved, cortisol levels are going to rise and it's going to prevent the scales moving.
Yeah, and the big drive for me, when I called it my 46-pound thought suit, and I've just taken off this. Mm. So when I see myself at the end of that thing, I went,
okay, there you are. You know, I've genuinely come home. I'm genuinely authentic.
You do know
myself.
That when we start doing workshops for real, I'm going to get you one of these thought suits. Is the
so Chris and Dan are going to have the avocado suits.
Yeah. And Ian's going to have a thought suit.
The weighted jacket.
Yeah.
Well, a thought suit would be that inflatable sumo wrestler.
Yeah, like a sumo wrestler. Yeah.
Keep me cool as well. It's got a built-in fan. I'll wear that. I'm happy to wear that. It's my thought suit.
You can start the session off on wearing that.
Yeah.
As you finish the session, you can take your thought suit off.
Yeah. love it.
So you did it for weight reasons and health reasons as well?
No, the main driver was health, if I'm honest. The real I've got to do something now, and I that's when I'm texting you going, you know, I'm now chasing you.
It was actually.
The weight was worth it. And you could have said, oh no, I'm sorry, I'm busy, I've got something else on. But you said the magic words. Yeah, we've actually got a local one in 2 or 3 weeks time, and I thought, oh, you're beauty, and it just felt aligned. Yeah. But the big drive for me is I've got a family member that struggles with kidney failure, which is linked to diabetes, and I've seen him really struggling with that. So I got the trigger that's where I was going. So I was eating eating so much sugar. I was insulin resistant. I was borderline type 2 diabetic. I had tingling in my hands, in my feet. Anytime I ate anything, I got a massive headache, not just sugar, but that as well.
Right.
I was getting massive headaches. I was getting palpitations. I had a detached retina. There was loads of stuff going on. I could feel it. I felt like I had gout in my, and this was at the time, this felt like, well, that's how it is when you're a certain age. That's how it is. But the thing that really surprised me when I stopped eating the sugar, and it was about 3 weeks in. And it was after that, and I even punished myself with the headache. You know, the headache you get when you give up on. I didn't take any tablets for it. I thought, that's it. That's telling me not to go. And I was 2 or 3 days in. But when I got a couple of weeks in, this brain fog, just the energy I got and the brain fog just went. I call it a sugar fog or something like that. And I just couldn't believe. And then I started to realize that I didn't have to have the tingling. I didn't have to have the, and I was under the doctors for all of this. They were, you know, I was waiting for the results to come back for all of this. So I didn't make it. Oh, and I had PVC, which is premature vascular contractions. Right. So I had that as well. So I was getting all the tests for that because it's in the family, you know, heart stuff in the family as well. And it all come back. Yeah, you're having palpitations, but it was being driven by the food I was eating. And as soon as I stopped, it just a calmness and an energy. And I don't think I would have been able to do what we do on a Monday night or as well as I do it, even though I'd signed off from my thinking. My body was in alignment as well.
Yeah.
And that was so powerful for me. Yeah, it was like a bonus. Because of my electrical engineering background, I'm going to say it amplified everything. It amplified it all.
And we see it's a common theme, isn't it?
Where
people sort of, you know, crack this and they sort of really sort of get their heads into sort of, you know, when I talk to people about it, sort of like, you know, moving from carbs to keto, is it's not just about weight loss. It's about how different you're going to feel. And if you can feel better, your weight might stay the same for weeks and weeks. But if you can feel better, there's a bonus there already. And straight away, you feel more positive, so you feel better. So therefore, you're more likely to stick with the changes in your lifestyle that you've just made.
Yeah. So if I was not to say I started happy, let me say it another way. I didn't have any insecure thinking around it. And that's another personal thinking.
Yeah.
I had no insecure thinking about it. So it wasn't like, oh, if it doesn't work in the first 4 weeks, I'm going to stop. And I realized that insecure, you know, urgency to get to where you need to get to. And I didn't really have a goal, I said for my birthday, but it would have been okay. It would have been okay if that you know, there was another goal. I've forgotten. I better say it was my daughter was going to get married, but that was the real goal.
Oh, okay.
And that was in July.
Right,
so, but I had it in my head that got postponed to next year. So, but that didn't even stop me. I didn't go, I'm going to stop now. So it wasn't really but it was just that's probably the target if I'm thinking about it, but getting rid of the insecure thinking about it all.
And that's
the urgency.
That's a big thing when people are starting, because they give themselves a really big target to achieve in a very short space of time.
Yeah. And it can't help that it's innocent, because usually the first sort of week is sort of like 6, 9 pounds, 11 pounds. I introduced my brother and my sister to it, and they were losing them big weights, and then they go, oh, but it's stalled now. And I must be doing it wrong. And I can see the insecure thinking coming in, and I'm going, just stick with it. And sometimes I get flummoxed. I don't, you know, so I point them to you, but knowing what to do practically about it. But
yeah,
you don't help anything by stressing about it, because then you release the cortisol, and that can actually have a dampening effect, just like alcohol does as well. Like, you know, if you have some alcohol, it stalls you a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But that's okay. It's okay to do that. If it's relaxing you a little bit. I'm not advocating people drink, but I don't actually drink that much. You know, I and now it's great because I can have a...
It's hard though, isn't it, to sort of be able to guide people into the right information at the beginning. So I say, look, it may take a few, you know, it may take a few months to actually start seeing some real significant changes. But how do you get people to remain positive during that time? And I know you're going to sort of say it's just about one thought.
Yeah, well, it's about thought, but I would go a bit more practical than that. I would say, well, don't compare yourself to others. Well, you know, don't, you know, because I'm saying 16 weeks, and that might just be my genetics or my makeup.
I did 22 pounds in 8 weeks. So, I could have beaten you by 46 in 16, did you?
Yeah.
All right, no, you'd have beaten me by a couple of pounds.
You know,
the same weight as me.
No, that 22 pounds, that sounds about right for the first sort of eight weeks. It sounded something like that, maybe. Yeah, it felt like about 20 odd pounds. So yeah, and it just, I ate so well. I ate so well, and still I was never hungry. Yeah, well, I do. Yeah, I still do. I still, I fast still, but I don't use the app anymore. I was using the app. I had like 100 because I just started using it on this, but I used to fast before as well. And
yeah.
So I eat two meals a day. I eat at 12 o'clock and I eat at 6 o'clock as best I can.
Yeah.
And then I'll fast. And sometimes, you know, when we did the carb recycling, because I went well below my target a little bit. So I came back up again because I thought, you know, then people were saying, oh, you don't want to lose any more.
Yeah.
I thought, I do. What I didn't say was this is a big game changer for me, and it finally happened, was the inflammation in your joints and stuff. Yeah. I didn't even know I had inflamed joints, but it really stops. You know, I used to go up the stairs and creak more than the stairs, and I just didn't. It's when you don't have the inflammation from not having the sugar. It just feels, you know, not just your brain, but your actual, all your joints.
It was weird. I've done 5 marathons pre-keto, 5 marathons on keto, and 5 marathons pre-keto, I would always struggle with my knees, sort of all through the training. You know, you second you hit a step and you put pressure on and you get shooting pain. I dropped the weight. Obviously, I eat better, and I've not had a single twinge in my knee ever since. Recovery is huge. Yeah, recovery is way better. And I was like, why are my knees no longer hurting? And again, I must have just been carrying inflammation around my knees.
Yeah, see, talking about 10 marathons, when I'm saying the inflammation's gone, I'm just happy that I can sort of put my underpants on without falling over. You can cut that out.
Not staying in.
So you win on that one.
Yeah. Right. So Monday night is a members only night. So we do that conversation, but you do help people on a one-to-one basis, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and again, Monday night is very much an open conversation, isn't it? It's not a full on sort of sharing. People can share if they want, but it
just goes the way it's going to go. Yeah. There's nothing prescribed. We have to have a title, and even that's quite vague, so people don't know. And people just rock up and they'll say what they want to say when they want to say it, and I'm happy for that. You know, and if there's silence, I'll either fill it with something else.
Yeah,
you know?
Because of course we need to mention the poems.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Ian reads out at least one poem every session. He's got into the habit of playing some music as well recently.
Yeah, yeah. I quite like that. That's going to continue because I've got people to give me music that reflects their aliveness. You still need to give me yours, and you need to still give me yours. But what people are sending, what, because we had the aliveness thing, and I've got quite a few there now. So I'm going to play them because somebody always gets something out of it.
Yeah,
you know. And so I play music and I read one poem. It's not at least one. It's one. I know it feels like three.
and are we allowed to mention it?
I might as well.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Along with so, how many poems have you written?
Probably about nearly, it might be over 100 now.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And currently, Ian and Ella are working together to create a book of poems. What are you calling it? Sorry, I'm not part of this conversation, so.
The title.
No, as in, you.
I call, so it's an anthology.
Anthology, there you go.
A collection of poems.
A collection, right, okay. You can talk about it.
Yeah.
So what's the thinking behind it?
Well, the thinking for me, is these poems I wrote about over a year ago. Now, yeah, so the reason I can write poetry is because I've completely defragged my thinking brain and allowed the creativity. And that's why I try to get across to people. Their creativity might be playing music or might be painting. So I didn't even know that I could write poetry until 2 and a bit years ago. And I just started to write them. And they were flowing out of me. And the essence of them is, a lot of it's about coming from a place of loss, but it's really about pushing for the hope that's there. And that's what I'm called by the aliveness. So working through the poetry book, it sort of starts off with helping you understand. And most of the poems themselves start off with, maybe you're a bit like this, but actually there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's hope there. So it's really a book about hope. And yeah, hopefully people will read them. And people have said that they've got like their own insight from one line or one verse of a poem. And it's the vagueness and the poeticness of the words that sort of point to their own insight.
Right.
So every poem will mean something different. What it means for me, I sort of explain that, or will explain that in the book briefly. But what I'm trying to say is, for years I've suppressed my feelings and now I'm expressing them. And if you suppress any feelings like sadness or anger, then you suppress all your feelings.
Yeah.
And once you take the lid off that, then aliveness comes. So once you tune into AM and not FM.
So you two have been working together on getting the book produced. I'm thinking maybe the podcast might come out the same time as the book.
Might be a
nice little.
I'm a bit short on time, so yeah. Be a couple.
She's a bit short on time because she's trying to produce two books at the moment. Oh,
secret project.
Right.
Members were grilling me on that this morning.
Were they?
What's the project?
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
Yeah. Well, they won't get to see this one until Ian's book is actually announced. If you would like to get hold of a copy of Ian's book or anthology of poems, links will be in the description. The design work which Ella has done is stunning. She's actually making use of her A-level art.
Which I'm not creative at.
She's making use of it because the other stuff that she does is very much cartoons at the moment that she's drawing. I think are we about done?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'd like to say thank you very much. Thank you for everything you do for the members. I know how much they not just appreciate, but they rely now on that Monday night, and they use Monday night as their time. In fact, people are now, you know, if they've only got one night a week where they'll spend it away from the family, they're coming into that session to spend it with you. And that, to me, they don't do that for me. but it just says everything about sort of like the importance of being part of that community and understanding that they're not alone. The feelings that the thoughts that they're having, most of us have, and it's okay.
Beautifully
said. Is that
all
right?
It's beautifully said.
Yeah.
I want to say that I really enjoy the Monday nights. It's I really enjoy it, and I want to thank you guys for having me on the podcast as well.
It's fabulous.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. So, folks, that's Ian McGill. If you want to know more about Ian, go to the website, ketofitnessclub.com, and he's in the About Us section, isn't it? Yeah, he's in the About Us section. You can come and join the members group and be involved in the Monday night chats, or you can also connect with Ian on a one-to-one basis and just have a one-to-one, as it were. and let him fix you.
Yeah, I like to call it, it's like a free clarity consultation.
A free clarity consultation. Okay, so that's all going to be in the website as well. Right, thanks, Ian.
Great, cheers. Brilliant. Man.